information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
To border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Some terrorist thing just to steal some money out of Congress?
Their arrest was only the beginning.
We are being lied to by
the government. They were innocent. They have no idea what they're up against.
I'm not asking you to listen to outside pressures. I ask that you listen to your soul. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 223 from Media Monarchy. It's the 1st of July, 2011, and my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, the saddest summer news purge, Clyde's chemtrails and false floods, Hypno High, Holy Hair, McKinney, Halperin, Amtrak, Greece, rural councils, Klamath cops, and composing film history. All that and so very much more on this new moon, July 1st, 2011, episode 223 for MediaMonarchy.com.
This is the saddest summer ever.
Ah, the fireworks have begun, my friends. That was The Drums from their debut record, 2009, Summertime EP. That was the saddest summer ever. And we're hoping it's not. Ladies and gentlemen, it's July 1st, 2011, and this is episode 223 for Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, broadcasting live, as always, every Friday morning, 10 a.m. Pacific time, on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and simulcast worldwide thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net. Their support helps spread this show and all the other alternative media outlets online, on the air, word of mouth. It all works. Also, I always like to thank my man Jeff at Radio23.org for the extra hosting, and of course, you can make contact with Media Monarchy. FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Gmail, and Skype, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username. Huge thanks over the last week. All the donations from return donors to the show, like Chris on Homeland Lane in Texas, Daniel in Medford from right here in Oregon, Stephen the B-Man out in Oklahoma, Michael in California, and my man Samuel in Belgium. Huge thanks to all those folks. I'm still looking into setting up a subscription button so it would be an automated subscription and support to Media Monarchy. My team's looking into it. Which is a euphemism for me. It's a one-man band, and it's a big tent, wide-open arm approach. We're nonpartisan here. We like to lay out as much information over the previous week that we've posted to all the sites in the growing Media Monarchy kingdom, and we're going to go over all of them, everything, today, jammed into this two-hour show, episode 223. And we always glance at the breaking news. Dominic Strauss-Kahn released from house arrest as the case teeters, as the focus shifts from the accused to the accuser. Hugo Chavez admits treatment for cancer. Minnesota government shuts down over budget deficit. And of course, all your favorite tabloid trials. Dancing with the Murderers. So we'll always keep that page open to see what happens on this Friday day. New moon, July 1st, 2011. The way will begin. As I speak to you now, it is not yet published, but by the time most of you are hearing this, I'll publish it along with this episode you're hearing right now, and that's my interview with The Real Plato on the world's first Bitcoin road trip. This latest special interview episode from Media Monarchy features an outdoor conversation with The Real Plato as he completes the world's first Bitcoin road trip. Crossing the finish line right here in the Pacific Northwest, we met our guest in the park to talk about how we made it all the way across the country using only a new form of digital currency called Bitcoin. You may recall a couple of months ago, James Corbett did an interview with The Real Plato. That's when we connected up, and he told me he was going to be in Portland, so we connected up. I believe he's exploring on through the Pacific Northwest. And like we always say, on the main site, the main feed will get you all the shows, all the videos, all the audio. Feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy, and that is linked up for you right on the top right of the page with all the main popular buttons, the F and the T. But this is the MM, my friends. The latest episode of New World Next Week, episode 78, Time Tests, Megaquakes, and False Floods. All of those stories we're going to get into a little bit on this episode, so we won't do it right here, only to say NewWorldNextWeek.com, the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, covering some of the most important developments in alternative news and open source intelligence. Always a great show. I'm so thankful to be able to do that show with James Corbett. The Hardest Working Man in Alternative Media, episode 192 from Corbett Report, the latest edition of the Requiem for the Suicided series. I believe previously featuring folks like Gary Webb, Terrence Yakey. But this, episode 192, gets into Dr. David Kelly. Famed microbiologist and UN weapons inspector Dr. David Kelly became the center of a dispute between the BBC and the UK government over claims that the government had sexed up its dossier on Saddam's weapons of mass destruction in order to sell the Iraq war to the public. He was found dead on Harrowdown Hill on July 18, 2003. It was ruled a suicide. In this episode, 192 from CorbettReport.com looks at the troubling discrepancies, inconsistencies, and questions that surround the official verdict and broach the question of what secrets Dr. Kelly may have taken to the grave. The latest videos from Corbett Report, the Sunday update now done in conjunction with GlobalResearch.ca, gets into the debt contagion and the global economic collapse. And also a weekday update on Canada's foreign minister meeting with Libyan rebels. I just made air quotes. And also the latest interview and conversation with Lieutenant Eric Schein of In the Zone. We also have the latest episode from PeaceRevolution.org, the folks behind Tragedy and Hope. .com Episode 34, How the World Really Works, Cause and Effect versus Our Beliefs. This episode has moments of clarity from Lee Camp, gets into Franz Liszt, Jordan Maxwell, the definitions of anarchy, autonomy, Amtssprache, which is something that we discuss on episode 1 of NavigatingNetflix.com, The Experiment. Episode 2, coming soon. All that and so much more on the always mind-blowing PeaceRevolution.org podcast, the number one higher education podcast on Podomatic. And lastly, in the realm of alternative media hosts that I'm blessed enough to be associated with in some way, my man Clyde Lewis from right here in Portland, Oregon, GroundZeroMedia.org. Pathocracy, Eden, Oracles, and more. Last Monday's episode, The Alien Coup, The Underlying Pathocracy, The New and Everlasting Eden, and The Oracles of Doom. Posts an article every day for his daily show on KXL 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon, KXL.com worldwide, and you can hear Clyde Lewis weeknights, 9 to midnight, bringing guests like Jordan Maxwell to the airwaves for a mainstream, right-leaning, mainline talk radio station. And we'll use that transition to move to cyberspacewar.com, just one of the sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, where my man Alan in Omaha, while paying attention to the situation at the Fort Calhoun nuclear plant, as we'll discuss that in a little bit. My main man, main writer and editor over on cyberspacewar.com posted up something about one of Clyde's previous episodes on Elenin, and we mentioned it last week as if it were an acronym, the comet Elenin, coming soon to a planet near you, perhaps. Extinction-level event, notable impact nemesis, and it gets into the predictive programming and the connections between Comet Elenin and the television show The Event. So this features other information from Exopolitics and PDFs for you to download and check out. But the dilemma and the interesting angle is summed up pretty well by Clyde, that our situation is like the TV show The Event. We're going to wait and see if we'll be renewed for another year. On the flip side, more interesting alternative space history, getting into Anunnaki, Weapons of Terror, Sasha Lessen, Zechariah Sitchin, all that and more. End of Sumer, 2024 BC. But from the BC to the EMP, Super EMP remains an instant kill shot threat, an electromagnetic pulse, as we discussed last week. From a high-altitude nuclear detonation over the United States remains an instant kill-shot threat that can stop our country cold in its tracks. Last week, we read into the record in the headlines, North Korea tests super EMP nuke, corrects widely reported erroneous conclusion that a 2009 test was a failure. The EMP threat lingers in the background. Furthermore, on Cyberspace War, the June 30th DEF CON news purge, copy wrong, dislike, and discoveries from boingboing.net, one of the biggest sites in the world wide web, leaked. UK copyright lobby holds closed-door meetings with the government to discuss a national web censorship regime. Dislike. Terrorists terrorized, Al-Qaeda's network hacked. More on that from nationalterroralert.com. And the SCOTUS term in review from Threat Level notes that it's kind of a mixed bag on tech and civil liberty decisions. As Hulu flirts like a whore for a John, Comcast must stay mum. More on that from UPI. Meanwhile, Facebook, on a list of 15, is the 10th most hated company in the U.S. Again, hence the dislike. News Corp on the verge of MySpace sale. We reported that for you months ago on NewWorldNextWeek.com. A judge has ruled Google can be sued for wiretapping in their last year's Street View debacle. And a great piece that's posted to deadlinelive.info gets into KKR, Kohlberg, Kravis, and Roberts. They're going to buy, perhaps, top web hosting domain registrar GoDaddy. GoDaddy brings you the domain names from MediaMonarchy.com and all the other sites in the kingdom that then redirect to the free blogger sites. This article gets into the who, what, when, where, why, how of KKR. Hedge fund, private equity firms with their private intelligence tentacles. Highly recommend that piece from deadlinelive.info. The last note on this June 30th DEF CON copy wrong dislike discoveries from Red Orbit. Scientists discover most distant quasar known to exist. And as we continue on cyberspacewar.com, we'll shift into some of the other heavier news that will then bring us around, and it's all connected. Somehow the shell game's all connected. Water intake building, the most critical at Fort Calhoun plant. Arnie Gunderson, who we've mentioned several times in relation to the nuclear situation in Nebraska, raises awareness of nuclear plant operations single-handedly with his online videos, fairwinds.com. Gunderson points out in a WBAI interview, a small water intake building with primary role in keeping nuclear materials cool may be most critical factor at Fort Calhoun. Dutch sense readings at Calhoun's waterlogged nuclear plant. On the job with readings taken June 24th at the inundated Nebraska nuclear plant. Radiation measured at 61.4 clicks per minute. Mid to low level background radiation. rumor, like in so many situations, can run amok. And there has not been any sort of detectable radioactive leak. We also have more on the flood wall that did collapse at the Calhoun nuclear reactor. Sourcing back to an article on Omaha.com, an ancillary flood wall collapsed in the early hours of last Sunday morning at the nuke plant. 2,000-foot berm collapsed at 1:25 a.m. Sunday due to on-site activities. Another article on Omaha.com is called Flooding, The Worst Is Yet to Come. So from one bad situation to another, is the nuclear genie out of the bottle at Los Alamos National Laboratory? An Intel Hub article gets into Los Alamos fire, perfect cover for nuclear false flag op. And it challenges the politically correct programming with what writers believe, one, has to suspend all normal modes of thinking and understand that the individuals with the power behind the 9/11 false flag event on 9/11 don't think like us. Any casual observer would admit the number of unfortunate incidents are climbing. Is the Los Alamos fire going to be used as cover for some type of black operation to seize nuclear materials? Or the supercomputing systems at Los Alamos, the target of a computer software hack? Could that bring us back to Stuxnet? Furthermore, on cyberspacewar.com, on the chatter surrounding any of these events, and again, we don't want to make the mistake in the alternative media of constantly saying, oh, this is it. Oh, here it comes. It's martial law tomorrow. There's a nuke going off. False flag this weekend. Here's the date. Because it's never right. But we've gone over the interesting connections that puts Little Beirut in some type of crosshairs. That would be Portland, Oregon, the city I'm soaking in. We've discussed Operation Blackjack, we've discussed the work of Eric May, and we've discussed the top-off drill, the rogue B-52s, the situation in Chicago with Rahm and the Willis Tower and Silverstein. But getting back to the tech on cyberspacewar.com for the remaining pieces on the site, brazen hacker group LulzSec says it's disbanding. And their final cache included AT&T internal data and 750,000 user accounts. From the Associated Press, a publicity-seeking hacker group that has left a trail of sabotaged websites over the last 2 months, including attacks on law enforcement and releases of private data, said unexpectedly last Saturday it's dissolving itself. Lulz Security made its announcement through its Twitter account, twitter.com/lulzsec. It gave no reason for the disbandment, but it could be a sign of nerves in the face of law enforcement investigations. Rival hackers have also joined in on the hunt, releasing information they say could point to the identities of the six-member group. One of the group's members was interviewed by the Associated Press last Friday and gave no indication that its work was about to end, or was ending. LulzSec claimed hacks on major entertainment companies, FBI partner organizations such as InfraGuard in Atlanta, the CIA, the U.S. Senate, and a porno site. And really, what's the difference? Supplementary links and flashbacks for you to cyberspacewar.com and Fox News and to that Twitter account and ZDNet and Reuters and more related to that updates. All in that flurry of activity. They also released Arizona police documents. More on that from Threat Level. The AT&T data trove on DSLReports.com and FBI raids Iowa woman's home in LulzSec hacker investigation. Now, when you're releasing 750,000 user accounts, that's not something that's going to generate a lot of support from the people, is it? And is that the thing that made other hackers say, if you guys do this again, we'll expose you and take you out? I mean, it's one thing to hack into the CIA or Senate website if there's some kind of political protest motivation to it. But if you're releasing people's accounts, that's what makes situations like these stink. And we see so many times agent provocateur situations. So whether that's the cops helping to loot in Vancouver or the cops helping to loot in Joplin, as we'll discuss in a little bit, or one in four U.S. hackers, an FBI informant from The Guardian just a few weeks ago. So just a couple days after that, LulzSec disbands. Hackers take down MasterCard for a second time. This from Raw Story. The website of credit card provider MasterCard taken offline Tuesday morning, apparently due to hacker activists trying to make a statement about the financial blockade of anti-secrecy website WikiLeaks. MasterCard, along with Visa, PayPal, Bank of America, and Western Union, have all decided to withhold funds from WikiLeaks, and the site placed their resulting losses at nearly $15 million. They took the drastic action after the site began releasing U.S. diplomatic cables allegedly turned over to them by a lone U.S. Army private, Bradley Manning. When MasterCard first announced it was cutting off WikiLeaks back in December, hackers with the protest group Anonymous took their site offline and stopped MasterCard transactions for at least several hours. Visa, PayPal, and Bank of America were also targeted by similar attacks and saw their website services interrupted, but did not lose the ability to process transactions. MasterCard's site outage Tuesday morning comes just 1 week after WikiLeaks released a promotional video in the style of a MasterCard's priceless advertising campaign. It urges viewers to learn more about the site's ongoing battle with the financial world and to support their work. You can check out that clip and check out that video. It's quite well done. But you get that creepy feeling when you see Julian Assange at the end. Tuesday's hack was announced from a Twitter account that did not appear to be directly related to Anonymous or the now infamous LulzSec group, and almost immediately repeated by the official WikiLeaks account. MasterCard's site had returned at the time of this story's publication from Raw Story, and again, more on that from The Telegraph and WikiLeaks.org and those Twitter accounts and more. What is going on here? We've discussed or speculated, predicted, mentioned, fretted, fear-mongered, discussed an I-9-11. And we've been discussing that for the last couple of years on this show. And the I-Patriot Act that is waiting on the shelf, waiting for it. But our last piece on cyberspacewar.com is one of the stories we cover on the latest New World Next Week. Power grid experiment could confuse electric clocks, and that is the year-long experiment with America's electric grid. Could mess up traffic light security systems in some computers and make plug-in clocks and appliances like programmable coffee makers run up to 20 minutes fast. A lot of people are going to have things break, and they're not going to know why. More information on this interesting story from CBS News and the Epoch Times and Business Insider and Newsworks.org and the comments on the YouTube video for this that's on youtube.com/Corbett Report has interesting bits, and there is a little bit of good discussion going on there about this power grid experiment could confuse electric clocks. We'll now move to foodworldorder.com for the June 30th binge and purge. False floods, seed supplies, and record highs. This Binge and Purge list of headlines begins with one of the other stories we cover on NewWorldNextWeek.com. The feds buying up farmland, they flooded, and it seems George Soros and his connected cronies are in on it. The original report from KMBC.com, odd letter from Army Corps of Engineers upsets property owners in Kansas City, Missouri. False floods.
The big water was just starting to rush out of the Gavin's Point Dam on June the 6th. The releases are almost twice as big now as they were in early June, prompting the problem. The letter says the Corps is currently seeking willing sellers. Part of a 15-year-old Corps plan to buy up river property or obtain easement. They want the property to enhance wildlife areas for species like the pallid sturgeon. That's an endangered fish the Corps considers when managing the river. But to some critics of the Corps, it proves their point. We reached Bruce Bierman by phone.
And this just further endorses that they want to go ahead and get the ground they're flooding for other purposes such as protecting endangered species.
We clearly understand that the timing of that letter, this go-around, could be seen as insensitive to the folks that are experiencing flooding. It should not have occurred, but it did.
Knievel says this may be a case of the right hand not knowing what the left was doing. But conspiracy theorists think the Corps is deliberately releasing massive amount of water in hopes of driving down the sales price on flooded ground.
We'd never tie that together. We're operating these main stem reservoirs purely for flood releases at this point. It has nothing to do with buying land to restore the Missouri River ecosystem.
Now, it's interesting, the written piece from KMBC.com does not use the term conspiracy theorists like that video clip does. So again, more on that story on episode 78 from NewWorldNextWeek.com. Furthermore, on Food World Order, Binge and Purge, Georgia's harsh immigration law leaves crops rotting in fields. More on that from AllGov.com. And an interesting piece from Amy Goodman posted on The Guardian, freeing the Florida food terrorists. Think of food terrorism and what do you see? Diabolical plots to taint items on grocery store shelves? See, again, even folks like Amy Goodman on the mainline left gatekeeping left still buy into the phony war of terror scheme. Continuing. If you're Buddy Dwyer, the mayor of Orlando, Florida, you might be thinking of a group feeding the homeless and hungry in one of your city parks. That's what Dwyer is widely quoted as calling the activists with the Orlando chapter of Food Not Bombs, food terrorists. In the past few weeks, no less than 21 people have been arrested in Orlando, the home of Disney World, for handing out free food in a park. Food Not Bombs is an international grassroots organization that fights hunger. As the name implies, it is against war. Its website homepage reads, quote, Food Not Bombs shares free vegan and vegetarian meals with the hungry in over 1,000 cities around the world to protest war, poverty, and the destruction of the environment. With over 1 billion people going hungry each day, how can we spend another dollar on war? End quote. The Orlando chapter sets up a meal distribution table every Monday morning and Wednesday evening in the city's Lake Eola Park. Lately, the Orlando police have been arresting those who serve food there. The article goes on and gets into just the bad kind of situation that we're in. And food seems to be the main issue. Furthermore, from Forbes, amid record high food prices, Monsanto grows third quarter profits 77%. But Natural News knows that Monsanto's trying to take over the world's seed supply nation by nation. And it's a back-and-forth worldwide don't-eat-the-sprouts, all from the Barf blog. French say it's British sprout seeds. Don't eat the sprouts, the Idaho version, 19 sick with salmonella. Irish say don't eat raw sprouts. UK seeds linked to E. coli outbreak. All in the last couple days. When I saw this headline, I had to double check and see if they would actually mention it. And they do. On CBS, New study is wake-up call for diet soda drinkers, and I do notice that this has been their most popular story listed on their little charts on the right for pretty much the past day, because there are so many people addicted to diet soda. Sorry, soda lovers, even diet drinks can make you fat. That's the word from authors of two new studies presented Sunday at a meeting of the American Diabetes Association in San Diego. Yada, 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 study, da-da-da-da-da. Of course, diabetes, heart risk, cancer. Just how does diet soda make you fat? The other study may hold the answer. In it, researchers divided mice into two groups, one of which ate food laced with the popular sweetener aspartame. After 3 months, the mice eating aspartame chow had higher blood sugar levels than the mice eating normal food. The author said in a written statement their findings could contribute to the associations observed between diet soda consumption and the risk of diabetes in humans. Sweet misery, aspartame. Uncle Scam Food History Exhibit promotes food control. More on that from Food Freedom. And more on the update, the switch from mypyramid.gov to your plate. Your plate versus my plate. New guide gets mixed reviews. This is posted on tradingcharts.com, but it's originally from McClatchy News. It getting a little harder to chase down the news as the paywalls start to go up all around. So we end that with the flashback to the original posting on Food World Order, food pyramid being replaced with a plate. And as we continue on Food World Order, health alert, Anthony Guicardi writing on InfoWars with a health alert. 32% of organic produce contains perchlorate, P-E-R-C-H-L-O-R-A-T-E. It's common knowledge that conventional produce contains a whole list of questionable chemicals and harmful pesticides, just like we went over the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15 over the previous two episodes. Linked to birth defects and lower IQ in children, conventional pesticides are known to be health disruptors. But what about organic produce? Perchlorate, a pollutant and powerful endocrine disruptor that is a key ingredient in rocket fuel that's been in our water, has been found in 32% of organic produce. In 2005, the Journal of Environmental Science and Technology published a study on perchlorate levels in North America. They found, quote, with, of course, with the link for you to the NIH.gov, conventionally and organically produced lettuce and other leafy vegetable samples were collected from production fields and farmers markets in the central and coastal valleys of California, New Mexico, Colorado, Michigan, Ohio, New York, Quebec, and New Jersey. Results show that 16% of the conventionally produced samples and 32% of the organically produced samples had quantifiable levels of perchlorate using ion chromatography. Estimated perchlorate exposure from organically produced leafy vegetables was approximately two times that of conventional produce. End quote. Used by military defense contractors, aerospace programs, and various other military operations, perchlorate has been contaminated in its way into drinking water, feed, and edible plants, animal products, milk and breast milk, and both conventional and organic produce. It's so abundant in the food chain, in fact, that it has been found in virtually all humans tested. Another link, another footnote, another source back to the National Institutes of Health for you. The Colorado River is so thoroughly contaminated with perchlorate that 90% of the lettuce consumed during the winter months in the United States produced in the lower Colorado River was found to contain perchlorate. Third and final link for you to the original studies. From worse to bad to Australia and down under, new code fails to curb kid junk food ads. 2 years after Australia's major fast food chains promised to stop advertising to children, a study has found kids are still being exposed to the same number of junk food ads, linked to the Sydney Morning Herald for you. The study, published in the Australian Medical Journal, mja.com.au, claims despite the intro of an industry code of conduct in August 2009, children are still exposed to TV ads for fast food. Surprise, surprise. This code was signed by seven chains, including McDonald's, Pizza Hut, and Kentucky Fried Chicken. But the study, led by the University of Sydney, has found children's exposure to television ads for junk food remains unchanged since 2009. The related update from Fox News, U.S. doctors say ban fast food ads on TV. From down under to the States, fast food nation. Finally, on foodworldorder.com, the question from the Economic Collapse blog, why are food prices rising so fast? And I'll just mention right here before I forget as it pops into my head, I noticed the other day at work, at the grocery store I work at here in Portland, Oregon, Oregon-only chain, we've been out of the Numinos for a while. And then I realized because they're being replaced, a new product line is about to come out. So the old tags are still up, but underneath them are the new tags when the new product arrives. And I slid it over and looked at it and looked back at the original and looked at... They are all decreasing in size and increasing in price. Not one or the other. Now, both are happening. Numinos going up by a dollar and losing 3 or 4 ounces of size. Coming soon. So, you have been warned again. If you do much grocery shopping, you've probably noticed that the cost of food has been rising at a very brisk pace over the last year. Flashback link to foodworldorder.com. So, why are food prices rising so fast? Another link, flashback, Food World Order. According to Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, inflation is still very low and the economy is improving. So, what's going on? When I go to the grocery store these days, there are very few things that I will buy unless they're on sale. In fact, I've noticed that many of the new sale prices are the old regular prices. Other items have had their packages reduced in size in order to hide the price increases. Another flashback link to March of this year on foodworldorder.com. Food inflation hidden in tiny and tinier packages. But with millions of American families just barely scraping by as it is, what's going to happen if food prices keep rising this rapidly? The food prices are especially painful if you're trying to eat healthy. Most of the low-priced stuff in the grocery store is garbage. Eating the typical American diet is the highway to cancer, heart disease, and diabetes, the aforementioned diabetes. But if you try to stick to food that's healthy or organic, you can blow through hundreds of dollars in a heartbeat. Not to mention what we just went over a few minutes ago. In fact, the reality is that tens of millions of American families have now been essentially priced out of a healthy diet. Soon, there will be millions more American families that will not even be able to afford an unhealthy diet. Another flashback link for you on foodworldorder.com. That article from the economiccollapseblog.com does further get into... In answering that question that we posed, and I suppose we've talked about it a ton of times, but it's also one of those things that I talk about, but I'm not exactly doing myself. I don't have a garden. I live in an apartment in the city, like a dumbass. But I'd like to think, and we've said it many times, the optimist in me thinks that the tighter the grip goes, the more will slip through their fingers, and the more kind of simple revolutionary acts of making our own food and entertainment for each other can maybe change the world as the world changes us. Needless to say, I'm digressing. Let's switch gears and move to the latest site in the media monarchy kingdom, holyhexes.com. From the French agency press, French woman sues Opus Dei, claims brainwashing. That is the headline from the mainstream news. A French woman claiming to have been brainwashed by the secretive Catholic society Opus Dei is suing it for allegedly keeping her illegally as a domestic servant, she told the AFP Tuesday. Catherine T., asked not to be identified by her family name, said she joined a hotelier's school in northeastern France in 1985 when she was 14. She later discovered it was run by associates of Opus Dei. She said she was forced to take vows and made to work as a domestic servant for virtually no pay. Opus Dei responded in a statement that it was not involved in the charges being brought and had nothing to be guilty about. It will be the first ever trial targeting the organization, branded a sect by some, which came to wide attention after featuring in the blockbuster novel and film The Da Vinci Code. They assigned me a tutor, who was actually kind of a conscience instructor, Catherine told the AFP. I entered into the system. You were forbidden to talk about it to your parents. She said the group compelled her to take vows of obedience, poverty, and chastity, and for the following 13 years gave her jobs with organizations that her lawyer, Rodolphe Bosselot, said were linked to Opus Dei. She said she was made to work 14-hour days, 7 days a week, cleaning and serving. Staff paid her a salary and then reclaimed money from her by making her sign blank checks, supposedly to pay her room and board. She added that staff accompanied her wherever she went, including on visits to the doctor. On these occasions, she was taken to see an Opus Dei doctor who prescribed tranquilizers that left her senseless. Catherine weighed only 86 pounds in 2001 when her parents rescued her from the group. Lawyers first took legal action that year, alleging mental manipulation, among other charges. A 9-year investigation followed. Two Opus Dei leaders are now summoned to appear in Paris in a criminal court on September 22nd and 23rd on labor law charges of undignified punishment and not declaring her as an employee. The lawsuit also targets the University and Technical Culture Association, ACUT, which ran the school. It said it had nothing more than a cultural link with Opus Dei. There's nothing to this case, said the ACUT's lawyer, Thierry Laffier, insisting that Catherine T. was paid according to the work she did. French woman sues Opus Dei, claims brainwashing. And it just gets more insane. And as I believe I've said, it's interesting and that the time I launched this site, Holy Hexus, to deal with sinister forces and suspicious activities and the occult and religion and pop culture, if you will, there seems to be no shortage of it. Three Florida high school students are dead after being hypnotized by their school principal in Sarasota County, Florida, one in a car accident and two by suicide.
A high school principal under investigation. Police say he has been hypnotizing students. Three of them later died. ABC's Matt Gutman has that story.
It was certainly unorthodox, possibly illegal, but deadly? The Sarasota County, Florida School Board's report questions how, in the space of just a few months, three students hypnotized by Northport principal George Kenny died. The first died in March, a car crash. The second in April, a suicide. The third in May, also a suicide. All of them just shortly after being hypnotized. Kenny was open about his work, which he said was to help motivate students to focus on school and athletics. But officials discovered Kenny had hypnotized up to 75 people at the school, including students and their parents, as well as staff members and their children.
He's trustworthy, he's honest, he's been a great role model.
Kenny had even advertised his hypnosis on Amazon, recording these.
You will be going into a deep hypnotic trance. Although we call it sleep, you will actually be very aware of everything that happens.
It was not unnoticed. Kenny received three school board warnings to stop hypnotizing students, but did not. His attorney says he's done nothing illegal.
We have a story here that involves students, a principal, suicide, and hypnosis. Because two events occurred does not mean that one caused the other.
Hypnosis has become a staple for those hoping to quit smoking or lose weight.
Hypnosis creates conditions for relaxation so that the hypnotist can guide a student. So you have a lot of influence a lot of authority, a lot of responsibility.
Now, no charges have been filed, but Northport police are investigating. They say they intend to interview all 75 students and staff hypnotized by Principal Kenny. Now, he's no longer here at the high school. He has been reassigned to an administrative position.
This story is fascinating. Now, we have other links to the Daily Mail and ABC News, where that link comes from, and also MiamiNewTimes.com. But George Kenney, that last name, K-E-N-N-E-Y, something tells me he has an interesting background, and I can't remember. I want to say that I even saw in one of these stories that's linked up references him being a doctor. So he hasn't been fired. He's just been shuffled off to an administrative position. And it gets stranger and stranger on HolyHexes.com. In Oregon, searching for ghosts and taking care of the indigent dead. From our own Oregonian, not long after the Paranormal Researchers of Oregon Society banded together earlier this year, the members decided that in addition to investigating strange events and places, they wanted to find a way to give back. They needed a charity. Founder Mark Miner had a suggestion, the Oregon Indigent Burial Fund. Everyone knew at that moment that this was the one for us. It fit with us all the way around. If we can't help the spirits find their peace through research, then we can do it through their burial. The state of Oregon, which administers the fund, would be glad to have the help. As soon as the lawyer says it's legal to accept the donation and someone figures out how such a donation would be spent, the fund reimburses funeral providers for cremating up to 250 to 300 bodies of those people who are not claimed by relatives or friends every year throughout the state. It's terrible to turn down money, so we're trying to find a way to accept, said Christine Stone, spokeswoman for the Public Health Section of the Department of Human Services. Founder Mark Miner, age 42, an Albany, Oregon writer, said he's been long interested in forming a group that would look into paranormal activity geared toward the science of finding proof. Paranormal Researchers of Oregon Society, OregonProSociety.com. And again, from the French agency Press, Indian holy hair keeps the West fashionable.
It's no secret, there's definitely a price for beauty. But what is the best kept secret on the black market? Real human hair. It's a hot commodity, and criminals around the world are trying to make a quick buck off that new trend. A reported $150,000 worth of extensions were stolen from one Houston salon. And just recently, a beauty shop owner in Michigan was killed during an extension robbery. So why are the thieves after these extensions? Celebrities, they made them a huge trend around the nation. From Kim Kardashian to Beyonce, they have flaunted their luxurious locks. And thieves are after a particular brand. Remy seems to be the one to get your hands on. It's homemade by Indian women. It is also the most manageable and natural-looking extension. To cover a person's whole head, it can cost up to $400. Lisa Amosu, a beauty salon owner in Houston, was robbed of $150,000 worth of extensions. She tells KRIV in Houston, the gentleman took the window out of the frame, and he snaked in on the floor on his stomach to avoid motion detectors. And the robberies are not stopping there. Cops are on the lookout in Detroit for three suspects who killed an owner of a beauty supply store. Ronald Haddad, a Dearborn police chief, says this appears to be a random and senseless crime that will be subjected to all our investigative resources. Security has been heightened, but these greedy criminals, they've even found ways around those. One woman in Missouri City, Texas, set up burglar bars and security cameras, but the criminals, they just went to the business next door and drilled a hole through the wall, slid on the floor, passed the alarms, and they didn't go off. In Philadelphia, a woman wanted hair so badly, well, she just wrote a bad check for $2,200. When the hairdresser tried to get that money from her, the client responded with this text message.
You have no idea what you've gotten yourself into. You seem like a smart girl. Walk away now or you will regret it.
Blogger Glamazon Margo says this is a glamtrocity that she never, never saw coming. Glamazons, I am shocked and very appalled. I love me some extensions and I spend good money on my hair, but this takes desperation or weave addictions to a dangerously new level. Thieves are selling the extensions on eBay, on the streets, even out of their car trunks. There have been 35 robberies in Houston, Texas in the past year and a half. Only two of those have led to arrest. I'm Chance Seals for Newsy.com. Multiple sources. The real story.
strong religious belief and spirituality coupled with skyrocketing demand from fashion-conscious Western women has made India the world leader in the hair extension trade. The South Asian country has long been the world's biggest exporter of human hair, and companies involved in the sector estimate that the business is now worth up to 8.5 billion rupees, or nearly $200 million a year. Hair is offered as a sacrifice to the hundreds of thousands of gods in the Hindu pantheon for reasons as diverse as wanting to ward off ill health and misfortune or to bring luck and fortune. The practice is common in southern India, especially at temples in Tamil Nadu state, where people from all over the country come to be shaved. But those in the hair trade that feeds off the ritual fear for the future as modern India changes on the back of its recent economic boom open up the vast country to more secular consumerist pursuits and outside influences. There's been a change or trend in the reduction of the younger generation going to the temple and tonsuring their hair, says George Charian, chief executive of the Raj Hair International in the state capital, Chennai. They might cut their hair length halfway through, but not necessarily fully shave their hair, he told AFP TV. For now, though, business remains brisk. More on the Indian holy hair trade from The Guardian. And I believe we've made reference to the growing crime wave connected to salons and hair extensions. But I added into this the related bit on a documentary that I don't believe we've mentioned called Good Hair. It's not made by Chris Rock, but it features Chris Rock sort of as our tour guide. All about the world of mostly African-American hair practice and mistreatment. And it gets into the Indian holy hair situation. So I give you the Netflix link and the Wikipedia entry, and I think you can even check out the trailer and all of that stuff, all linked up on this post about Indian holy hair. I don't think it's on Instant Watch on Netflix right now, but I think it was, but you can get the disc. Or just download it. Continuing on holyhexes.com, faith shared. Dozens of Christian churches read from the Quran. The question asked by blacklistednews.com, is this another step closer to a one-world religion, as 50 U.S. churches read from the Quran last Sunday? From NBCWashington.com, Sunday services at the National Cathedral included readings from the Torah and the Quran. It was one of dozens of services taking place all over the country as part of the Faith Shared Project, designed to help promote understanding and respect across all religions. Interfaith Alliance, Human Rights First, with links to CatholicReview.org and National Cathedral, and all of that as what did we report to you a couple of weeks ago? Jack Van Impe and Chrislam. We close out our HolyHexes.com coverage with the June 30th Pop Culture News Purge with Gay Green Gurus and the Gilded Cage. There's something about marrying. As New York State Senate legalizes same-sex marriage in a huge move, and now the largest state to recognize same-sex marriage, and we give you links to the Google News link and also my Twitter feed, twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. New York State Senate legalizes same-sex marriage. Big win for gay rights movement. New York, largest state to permit such unions. And it did remind me of The Simpsons, as so many things do. Their episode, There's Something About Marrying, is about Springfield legalizing gay money. I mean, gay marriage. Because there's money to be made. You're cutting out 50% of the population. Budgets are in the red. Start marrying up things. More on this from GodDiscussion.com. New York's religious think gay marriage will have moral consequences. Ultimately, my stand is, I don't care what consenting adults want to do. You either have sovereign personal liberties or you don't. Is something like this more important than not killing little brown kids all around the world and polluting the world? That's a debate to be had at another time. Sometimes pop songs double as prayers. That headline in the entertainment section in the New York Times caught my eye, but they're referring to a concert from someone named Milton Nascimento at the Rose Theater in New York. Robert Priddy getting into the Sai Baba hoarding secrecy, mistrust, powerlessness, and deceit. That would be Satya Sai Baba, the Indian guru that died at the age of 84 this past April, with a flashback link for you to holyhexes.com. This originally comes from The Telegraph, but of course I got it from the fantastic cryptogon.com. The E-Uterus. While Herman Van Rompuy, the president of the European Union, has described his Europa building as a jewel box, David Cameron has been less enthusiastic, dubbing it a gilded cage. But perhaps even more unfortunate is the moniker, the edifice, which will house Mr. Van Rompuy's presidential office and be home to future Brussels summits from 2014, the nickname that it's earned from the EU officials. Built as a state-of-the-art glass and wood wing to an existing Art Deco building, the complex will be focused around a womb-like central structure, providing a home for summits and meetings of Brussels officials or diplomats. And this organic-looking urn shape has already been nicknamed the E-Uterus by Council of the EU officials who will be working in the new building. It looks like a womb, and I am sure many grand visions of Europe will be birthed from there, quipped one official. And Cryptogon notes that he'll be looking for an update on VigilantCitizen.com's sinister sites. The final note on Holy Hexes is no surprise at all. The inbred, eugenics-obsessed elite, we know how they roll. We've discussed it many, many times. Prince Harry's new girlfriend is his cousin. Now, it's eight times removed, but how many stories do we constantly hear about Cheney's related to Obama's related to Vlad the Impaler's related to Brett? You know, that's how the families go. Now, my friends, that closes up all our coverage on holyhexes.com. and foodworldorder.com and cyberspacewar.com, and there is still so much more to come on the main site, mediamonarchy.com. But let's take another little noisy summer musical break from the Ravenettes.
Chewing on a whippy little dress is tight. Gonna make me burn, gonna make it right. Tell you little stories that I'll never hope that I'll end up right beside you when it comes. I'm gonna make it good this hour, make it true. Dancing on the stairs, I'll never get back home. Gonna laugh and smile, gonna make me moan. Do you ever think you may remember why you chose me instead of someone else? Why don't you start right now and know you won't regret?
like the offspring of Buddy Holly and girl groups in the Jesus and Mary chain. That was the Raveonettes with Noisy Summer from their first full-length album, 2003's Chain Gang of Love. We're into hour number two from episode 223 from Media Monarchy. It's July 1st, 2011, and my name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. For the remainder of this episode, we will shift to the main site, MediaMonarchy.com. And we're going to Chicagoland. The land of corruption. We'll take the piece from the Deutsche Press Agency. Blago guilty in Chicagoland corruption and selling Sotoro's Senate seat. That's my headline, but reading from the DPA, former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich was on Monday found guilty on 17 of 20 corruption charges in connection with trying to sell the Senate seat held by U.S. President Barack Obama before he took office. Blagojevich was found guilty last year of making false statements to federal investigators, but the jury was unable to reach a verdict on the other counts, setting the stage for a second trial. He was found guilty of racketeering, extortion, soliciting a bribe, and conspiracy. Some of those charges included shakedowns of a children's hospital and a horse racing executive. He was acquitted on one count of shaking down a construction executive, and a verdict was not reached on two other accounts, the Chicago Tribune reported. The newspaper reported he faces a significant prison sentence. Leaving the Chicago courtroom, Blagojevich said he was very disappointed by the verdicts. "I, frankly, am stunned," said Blagojevich, who has professed his innocence. Rod Blagojevich, age 54, had been accused of trying to sell Barry Sotoro, the man commonly referred to as Barack Obama's, seat, after he was caught on wiretap by federal investigators during a previous investigation. As governor, he had the power to appoint Obama's successor in the Senate until an election could be held. Blagojevich, a Democrat, arrested in December 2008, just weeks after Obama won the presidential election, after being recorded in a profanity-laced conversation describing the Senate vacancy as a golden asset for which he was seeking political or financial returns. The Illinois General Assembly impeached Blagojevich the following January and removed him from office. We have links to the Chicago Tribune and the original story on MediaMonarchy.com, posted December 9th, 2008. Illinois governor arrested for trying to sell Obama's Senate seat. The Chicago machine's corruption hits the fan, just as Webster Tarpley had predicted in Obama the Postmodern Coup and Barack Hussein Obama the Unauthorized Biography. In this twisted tale of Operation Board Games that has connections to Resco, Ouchie, and Bankster's Revenge. We also have other flashback links, and again, if you just follow and use the tags at the bottom of the post, the labels, you can see the suspicious deaths that have happened since Blagojevich has been arrested, and all of this stinks to high heaven in Chicagoland. Posted below this Blago guilty in Chicagoland corruption story, we have related Obama-Saya updates, and we'll begin with audio from the person who got my presidential vote in 2008, Cynthia McKinney, and the anti-war left stepping up against Barry.
Black America has been extremely supportive of our president, but not in this case. A line has been drawn in the sand with respect to our president bombing Africa. And Libya in particular, because of the a history of support when the United States was supporting apartheid in Africa, on the African continent. It was the people of Libya and the leadership of Muammar Gaddafi who were fighting to eradicate apartheid. And for those blacks and people of color inside this country who were fighting to eradicate American-style apartheid, the people of Libya and Muammar Gaddafi were supported as well. Now, I don't know that history, but Brother Akbar knows that history very well. And that is part of the reason why Black America has drawn this line in the sand, because this is something that is a historical relationship that has context that Brother Obama, that our President Obama, has stepped across. He has crossed over the threshold.
More on that, amazingly, from the Washington Times, and they provide the audio and they provide the links and other discussions about the answer rally that Cynthia McKinney was speaking from right there. We also link you over to her Twitter account, and we tweeted that out and tagged her on there. So again, I've been enjoying Twitter more and more. I like the ease and simplicity of it all, but I digress. Bill Maher says Obama sucking up to the people he should be fighting. So many times we have to discuss these things that the mainline left can't get past the question of, like, gosh, I can't believe he's doing that. I never would have figured this shady guy with a shrouded history plucked from Colombia with Brzezinski, with connections to CIA fronts like Business International Corporation, Goldman Sachs, homegrown terror, all of those things. Why would you still? It's that roadblock, and that's the problem, to put it quite lightly, of the fake left-right political paradigm in this country. And that's why people are stuck at the water cooler talking about, oh, that Michelle Bachmann, she's just as stupid as Palin. That's the level. Obama dismisses Libya criticism as political fuss. President Barack Obama defended the U.S. role in Libya on Wednesday, June 29, 2011, dismissing the criticism levied by Congress over the constitutionality of the operation. A lot of this fuss is politics, Obama said at a press conference. Which brings us to our next piece. While discussing this rare press conference from Barry Satoru, NBC political analyst Mark Halperin weighed in on Scarborough Brzezinski show.
Mark Halperin, what was the president's strategy? We're coming up on a deadline, and the president decided to please his base, push back against the Republicans. I guess the question is, because we all know a deal has to be done, is this sort of showmanship? You know, a lot of times you go out there and both sides, and they act tough so their base will be appeased, and then they quietly work the deal behind the scenes.
Are we on the 7-second delay today?
Oh, Lord. No.
I wanted to characterize how I thought the president behaved.
How do you think you
Well, we have it. We can use it, right, Alex?
Yeah, sure. Come on.
Yeah.
Take a
go for it.
F-A.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
Alex, I'm behind you. You fall down. I'm going to catch him.
And the precedent has been set on
the
show.
Okay, go ahead.
So we're good.
I thought he was kind of a dick yesterday.
Oh my God. Delay that. Delay that. What are you doing?
I think the president...
I can't believe you. I was joking. Don't do that. Did we delay that?
I hit it. I hope it works.
Okay.
MSNBC suspends political analyst Mark Halperin for Obama remarks. So, yes, Microsoft and General Electric have suspended him from their cutting-edge fake left. And it's interesting how MSNBC has kind of assumed the position of the fake mainline left that well-meaning liberals all over places like Portland, Oregon, love Rachel Maddow and MSNBC and think that's really giving them something. And you're getting crumbs and they're telling you it's a meal because it's the same fake political paradigm. With more on the story of Cynthia McKinney and Barry Obama bombing Africa, crossing that line in the sand, quite literally. More on this story from 21stCenturyWire.com. Libya folly may cost Barry the black vote in 2012. And the last piece is another video, as the other Bill Maher bit was the routine that got the Obama impersonator yanked off the stage. I thought about playing it, but then I changed my mind because I didn't want to play any more Bill Maher. But those clips are all up there, and so many of those clips come from Raw Stories video sister site called Raw Replay. Posted last Saturday on MediaMonarchy.com, 5 Bushehr nuke plant experts die in Russian plane crash, from CNBC. Russia's top nuclear agency said that 5 experts involved in the construction of Iran's Bushehr nuclear plant died in last Monday's plane crash in northeastern Russia. Rosatom said Wednesday that the 5 men were among 44 passengers of the Tu-134 plane that slammed into a highway near the airport in this area of Russia. It said the experts were on their way from Moscow to a meeting at a Rosatom subsidiary that manufactures equipment for nuclear plants. Rosatom said the men worked for 3 subsidiaries that have long been involved in the Bushehr nuclear plant project in Iran. The United States and some of its allies believe the Bushehr plant is part of an Iranian attempt to develop nuclear weapons. Iran denies the accusation. More on this story from Express and the Daily Mail and Iranian.com, and most importantly from AmericanThinker.com. But this reminds me of something that was discussed, and I wanted to mention it after the Cynthia McKinney clip, in regards to Gaddafi not being a religious setup, not a theocracy trying to eradicate apartheid. We can't have that. The Western finance oligarchs and the inbred eugenics-obsessed elite and their connected families and think tanks and NGOs, they need instability. They need chaos through which they can bring you their predetermined order. They can't have Western-educated folks like Mossadegh in Iran, because they're going to make their nation's first world. They're going to have a populace who is able to exercise some sort of human sovereign freedom. And we can't have that. That's why we have to launch covert operations, thanks to the Central Intelligence Agency, since 1947. And before that, it was OSS. But post-47, with the National Security Act, Operation Ajax, overthrowing Mossadegh in Iran, because he was educated in the West. And it's all about resources. We need religious nut jobs that we stir up so we can constantly keep this war of crumbling, illegal, immoral empire going. And unfortunately, they've tricked the masses into fighting these wars for them through the systematic destruction of our cities, our schools, our jobs, our families, our food, our families. We think we don't have any choice. Related murder and mayhem updates are posted below this Bushehr plane crash story. And again, so many things swirl around nuclear plants. From Iran to Nebraska to Japan to Jersey to Nevada. And speaking of Nevada, 6 killed in Nevada train truck crash. The death toll mounted. At this posting, DPA reporting 28 were still missing in this Nevada train truck mishap. Reuters reporting the driver in the Amtrak crash had 5 traffic citations. So here's the AP to hopefully break down succinctly this story of now the lawsuit, the first lawsuit filed over the Amtrak truck train crash in Nevada.
First lawsuit has been filed over a crash in Nevada between a big rig and an Amtrak train that killed at least 6 people and left 20 injured. Alexandra Curtis, an Amtrak train attendant who was among the injured, filed the lawsuit, which alleges negligence on the part of the truck driver and the company for which he was working. The driver, Lawrence Valley, was killed in the crash. He had only been driving for the John Davis Trucking Company for 6 months. Records show Valley had gotten 3 speeding tickets in California over the last 4 years. He was also arrested in Nevada in 2007 for skipping a court date after letting his vehicle registration expire. Investigators have not determined why Valley's truck hit the train, even as the crossing's flashing lights warned the train was approaching. The National Transportation Safety Board says the truck was going at a considerable rate of speed in a 70-mile-an-hour zone before the crash. Brian Thomas, The Associated Press.
When I first heard of this unfortunate story, I was immediately struck that this incident echoes the events of the new film, Super 8. We mentioned it a couple weeks ago because it was shot entirely in West Virginia. And in the movie, set in 1979, kids are making their own little B horror movie, and they happen to catch something on Super 8 while they're shooting. What they catch is a train crash. And the way this military train crashes that sets the film's events into motion of what's on that train. The train crashes because a dude drives his truck into it because he was trying to stop it because he knew what was on the train. Yeah, it's a coincidence. But how many times do trucks slam into trains on a massive kind of stage like this? A week after a major Hollywood film opens featuring the main plot-generating event, was a truck crashing into a train in a deserted area. So I tweeted that and tagged it, Super 8, incident echoes events of new film. And it gets even stranger from there, from the Daily Caller, out of Russia, woman wrongly pronounced dead, dies of shock at her own funeral. And I can't pronounce the name. This is from Russia. The woman died of a heart attack that was prompted by waking up to see she had wrongly been declared dead and placed in a coffin. When she opened her eyes in her casket, the 49-year-old Russian woman could hear mourners around her praying for her soul to ascend to heaven. She began to scream as soon as she realized what was going on. And she had a heart attack and died a second time. But ending the murder and mayhem updates and returning to Nevada just a couple of days after the truck train crash, a U.S. Air Force pilot unable to eject before F-16 crash in Nevada. More on that from Channel6NewsOnline.com. Continuing and getting into the geopolitical, economic war horror situation. At the time of this posting, Tuesday, June 28th, the vote loomed. And we do have the updates and how this is starting to play out, but this is posted under the headline, Greek PM Papandreou says, austerity is patriotic duty. From Kurt Nimmo, Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou told his fellow countrymen that it is their patriotic duty to accept the austerity plan cooked up by the IMF and the EU. If not accepted, Greece will not get the fifth installment of an international bailout, he warned. I'm not asking you to listen to outside pressures. I ask that you listen to your soul and your internal patriotic conscience. Greek opposition parties rejected demands by EU leaders for national unity on the prospect of unemployment, a lower standard of living, and a massive giveaway of natural resources and national resources. But austerity is our patriotic duty.
The Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou has told MPs that his government's austerity plan is the only chance for the country to get back on its feet. Unless it's approved, the European Union and International Monetary Fund say they won't release the fifth installment of an international bailout. Kicking off the parliamentary debate ahead of the vote, the Socialist Prime Minister called on all parties to back the latest measures. He said they secure the release of 12 billion euros. I'm not asking you to listen to outside pressures, he said. I ask that you listen to your soul and your internal patriotic conscience. The government will need its slim majority to get the package through. Opposition parties have rejected calls by EU leaders for national unity.
Okay.
You can't terrorise MPs with talk of patriotism, because if there's something we should be proud of today, it's the Greeks who've risen up from their indifference. Today and tomorrow we'll see more strikes and demonstrations called by the unions, seriously threatening public transport. Opinion polls suggest three-quarters of Greeks oppose the tax rises, spending cuts and privatisations. Athens needs the international funds to pay its bills and avert the Eurozone's first default.
Now, the updates come with a huge thanks to listener, audience member, and virtual friend, One Archangel, as he'll be referred to here, with updates from Greece. And with his permission, I posted his email to this story on Austerity is Our Patriotic Duty. Today they voted the midterm package austerity bailout, and there's chaos in the streets. Unlike the day before, where Agent Provocateurs was the flavor of the day, a fake cat-and-mouse fight between cops and anarchists, now it turned into average folk taking on the cops in dramatic fashion. Since pictures say a thousand words, bunch of great pics with a link for you, also a live streaming video to show you what was going on in the street, and another video showing 100% proof of Agent Provocateurs working with Greek riot cops. So, huge thanks again to One Archangel in Greece, and another hope that all the folks out there stay safe in all of the ridiculous situations people find themselves in. James Corbett in Japan next to Fukushima. And my man Alan in Omaha now next to whatever the hell is going on at Fort Calhoun in Nebraska. Newer friends I've connected up with now in Greece, where austerity is their patriotic duty, and it, of course, will soon be our patriotic duty. But I also have not one, but two Bryans in Missouri, and it's my mistake for confusing them. But I also have a whole bunch of updates that we were going to post to our storm coverage and our weather wars coverage. And we'll still have to do that for the situation there. So again, we'll just take a brief moment to say to everybody out there that stay safe. Let's get all our related econocrash geopolitical war whore updates. Greece approve austerity measures as protesters and police clash. And we have bits from Cryptogon and Raw Story and Raw Replay and News Junkie Post and so much more, but we're going to have to start picking up the pace here. Protests build in Greece as Parliament passes austerity measures. Greece explodes as global capitalists force austerity. Police violence greet the crowds. Video shows shocking police abuse amid Greek protests. I could only watch a few moments of it. But on to the UK. It was predicted and it came true. 750,000 plus Britons strike over austerity proposals in the UK, with video and more from NPR and more. Thousands of protesters in violent clashes with Egyptian police. Meanwhile, an Israeli journalist will defy Israel's warning and cover the Freedom Flotilla anyway.
He joins us now from Athens. He's an Israeli-American journalist with The Nation magazine. And you're going to get on the boat regardless of those warnings.
Yes, I plan to get on the boat and to complete my task the best that I can and objectively report exactly what I see taking place on the ships as we approach Gaza.
Let's just deal with the mechanics of it all. There's two issues here. One, there's been a warning to journalists now for this one. Plus, you know what happened a year ago on the Mavi Marmara. Regardless of what anyone thinks about those events, you are effectively a warning. You know what could happen here.
I'm fully aware, and I have to be quite frank and say that I do fear for my safety in covering the flotilla, but I believe that that this is an important international news story, and with the information that the Israeli government will be embedding its own journalists on Israeli Navy ships, as well as training IDF crews to photograph the passengers, I believe that it's of the utmost importance to provide both sides to the international press.
Do you fear, I mean, you said you're worried, do you fear another actual sort of Mavi Marmara style incident? The reason I'm asking is because the uproar was so huge last time, and I mean, I'm wondering if you think Israel would do it again, basically.
I think that we have to take the statements of the Israeli government very seriously, and the Israeli government has said that it will use all and any diplomatic and military measures at its disposal to stop the flotilla ships from arriving in Gaza. I also think that the statements of the U.S. Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, that have basically green-lighted any sort of military action against the flotilla are very serious, and we have to prepare for the worst, which could be a repeat of last year's Mavi Marmara attack.
Continuing geopolitics, Econo Crash, and War Horse updates. Four former Khmer Rouge leaders go on trial in Cambodia. And the Council on Foreign Relations celebrity Angelina Jolie visits Syrian refugees. More on that from CBC. As Syria heats up, along with all of the other situations, Obama awards Defense Chief Gates the Medal of Freedom. Meanwhile, military sources reveal ground force invasion of Libya, I believe specifically referring to Fort Hood, Texas troops being deployed to Libya. Boots on the ground, my friends. Change-a-looyah. Yes, we can wage endless immoral wars. But with a breakdown like no one else, Webster Tarpley appeared on Guns and Butter, and he is in Tripoli. Tarpley.net.
We speak by phone to Webster Tarpley, who is now in Tripoli.
How are you doing, Webster?
I'm okay. Look, this is chaotic. This is a war zone. You got to understand this. I'm sorry. It's very hectic and it's very chaotic, and the schedule is sort of made up from one minute to the next, partly because, you know, people are under a lot of stress because of this bombing.
Sure.
I haven't seen any explosions, but you see a bunch of bombed out buildings and things, and you realize that, you know, I've met people who have had their relatives killed, and it's just unbelievable.
Okay, well, let's get started right now.
I would like to do this sort of as a first-person reportage, right? Less theory, maybe, and more sort of what do you see, what is it like?
Absolutely. Webster, you're in Tripoli. What are you doing there? When did you arrive, and who are you traveling with?
Well, I'm here in Tripoli, Libya. I'm here at the Rixos Hotel, which is where the international media is based. This is where the press briefings of the Ministry of Information take place. And I've been here for some days, and I'm traveling with a group of journalists who have come in sort of on a fact-finding mission. And I would be delighted to share some of my impressions in the next hour, if nothing happens. I would say everything around here was with a big if, because we are under the bombing attacks of these NATO air bandits who come in usually at night, but not only at night, and they attack buildings, and they are attempting to kill individuals. I mean, we are in a reign of terror. We are in an international anarchy, which I find absolutely revolting and horrifying. Horrifying to be an American taxpayer in the middle of this monstrous process. They're obviously attempting to kill the leader here, Colonel Gaddafi, who's been the head of the country since 1969. And at the end, a few words about what his actual track record is, because in some ways it's very impressive, better than most American presidents in these certain regards. But they're attempting to assassinate him, and they're also attempting to assassinate people in his entourage. But it's not just that. You've also got the attempt to cut off the supply of fish from the Mediterranean, right? This is a port. Maybe I just give you basically a kind of a cascade of sense impressions, right? And you stop me if there's something that you might want to know more about. This is Tripoli. This is a city of 2 million people plus. The port is a beautiful arrangement. It looks kind of like Baltimore, but much newer. This city, concerning cities of North Africa, well, the other one that I know is Tunis, and this is much more modern and in much better shape, despite the things that have gone on. And so we're sitting here in this incongruous situation of a highly cultured center with people who are highly westernized, because that's the key to Libya, is that this is a progressive Arab nationalist regime. It's Arab socialism, as preached by Gaddafi. You'd meet people, you know, speaking perfect English and French and so forth. And the whole idea of the Libyan government is they don't like Islamic fundamentalists. They don't like bearded obscurantists who want to oppress women and shut down modern civilization. It's quite the opposite. They're interested in cultivating and obtaining and contributing to modern civilization.
There you have it, Webster Tarpley in Libya. Meanwhile, Ron Paul says Obama violated the War Powers Resolution and the United States Constitution with what we already reported to you, Obama calls, you know, the political fuss surrounding endless wars. U.S. Air Force advised to conduct simulations for strike against nuclear Iran. That's from WorldTribune.com, as if they haven't done that yet. And The Guardian reports, war number six, U.S. extends drone strikes to Somalia, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Libya, Yemen, Somalia. Yes, we can. Oh, how about this change? Iraq combat deaths at three-year high. U.S. to expand relations with Muslim Brotherhood. U.S. probing deaths of two terrorism detainees. And AllGov.com asking the important question, if U.S. troops are leaving Afghanistan, why are new barracks being built? And it's funny when you look at that word, it almost looks like, why are new barracks being built? Afghan central banker resigns, fears for his life. And at the time of this posting, the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case was close to collapse, say reports from The Guardian. But as we glance back to the breaking Google news right now, as we come to you on July 1st, 2011, 34 minutes ago, Dominique Strauss-Kahn's accuser cleaned after the encounter, and he has been set free from house arrest. But returning to our other geopolitical economic war horror updates, threat of $100 billion hit if the U.S. loses its top rating. And a report says Tiny Tim, Treasury Secretary Geithner, considering stepping down. And something that caught my eye in the print edition of the New York Times, and it's posted in their Deal Book blog, former executives claim Marsh and McLennan colluded with Spitzer. And as we always say, for more on that, go check out the work of Richard Grove. Last couple notes. More than 2,000 companies hide assets using one address in Wyoming. Labeled the Little Cayman Islands on the Great Plains, a modest-looking home near the state capital of Cheyenne, Wyoming, serves as the official address for more than 2,000 companies, including phony ones set up to hide assets from the government. The house, located at 2710 Thomas Avenue, is owned by Wyoming Corporate Services. I'll have my people in Wyoming look into that. And our final note on this posting, Greek PM Papandreou says, austerity is our patriotic duty. We return to the soon-to-be North American Union, where Home Depot faces a lawsuit for allegedly violating the Buy American Act.
Retail giant Home Depot is facing a federal lawsuit for allegedly violating the Buy American Act. This photo on its website shows a line of soldiers unloading a truck stacked with power tools and other company products with the caption, federal dollars go further at Home Depot. The problem is, as one attorney points out, many of those products were made in China. The 1933 Buy American Act is aimed at protecting U.S. jobs by requiring all materials used on public projects originate in the United States. A judge has scheduled a trial for next year.
You can't make it up, ladies and gentlemen. We have finally made it to the 6:30 news purge on MediaMonarchy.com. That stands for June 30th, and it's the saddest summer news purge. Let's get into it. 9/11 updates. Study says post-9/11 wars cost U.S. at least $3.7 trillion. From CBS News. WTC7 fuel tanks claim still worth millions. Electricity company lawsuit claims fuel tanks below WTC added to the destruction. More on that from 9/11 blogger and allgov.com. Meanwhile, the New York City Department of Building said portions of WTC Command Center plans are withheld because their release would endanger life or safety. And our last 9/11 update, Justin Bieber's pal Barry Satoro introduces him to 9/11 teens. Obama got Bieber to meet with kids who are 9/11 victims' family members. How sweet. Our BioWars EnviroHealth updates begin with the third story we covered on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Scientists say California mega quake imminent, and that's from the Weather Channel. Minot flooding reached epic proportions and still rising. NRC website defines media blackout over Nebraska nuclear plant flooding. Kansas firefighters fired for Joplin looting. And Joyce Riley getting into it on the Intel Hub that they are flooding us on purpose, as we've already reported for you. And more on underwater body bags. Experts warn epic weather ravaging U.S. could worsen. And a story I missed last week in the jumble of all the news from McClatchy: heat, cold, flooding, drought greet U.S. on summer solstice. And it's a big, long list of all the insane weather going on, in addition to the multiple nuclear plants under threats in the states from either floods or fires. Cooling pump fails at New Jersey nuclear reactor. Plant shuts down. Remained in hot shutdown. That's from ENENews.com. Wildfire reaches U.S. Los Alamos nuclear laboratory. And the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporting a flying lab will monitor the smoke near Los Alamos. U.S. Army's criminal investigation lab seeped in chaos and controversy. Botched investigations, quote-unquote, from Pat Tillman to Fort Hood and more. Japan discovers ton of radioactive water leaking into the ground. Potential catastrophe spread as 1 sievert per hour water found leaking from Fukushima. And Fukushima residents, according to JapanTimes.co.jp, Fukushima residents' urine now radioactive. And loosely tying it all in the BioWars EnviroHealth updates, U.S. using mystery shoppers to check on access to doctors. So that would be Obamacare using stealth operatives to investigate every little micromanaged part of your sad and sickened life. Our drug war updates: first ever federal bill to legalize marijuana, and that is from Ron Paul and Barney Frank. The Wonder Plant. God, if you read the Bible, said he gave us every seed-bearing plant to use. And we will. Someday soon. But 6 were indicted in Oregon in a record bust of a marijuana farm. More on that from Reuters and our own Oregonian. And from Dispatch.com, $90 billion hasn't secured the border because it's not supposed to. And our police state updates from Talking Points memo: private prisons love mass incarceration, and they want your sucker politicians to love it too if they don't already, and beg for a private run-for-profit prison in your town where you can arrest nonviolent drug offenders and other enemies of the state. 95-year-old woman dying of leukemia asked to remove her adult diaper during a TSA search in Florida. So, TSA are too busy searching diapers and only slightly less molesting of small children and not so much worried about, you know, checking passports or flight passes?
An embarrassing incident for airport security. The FBI now getting involved after a passenger flew from JFK to Los Angeles without proper ID and with an expired boarding pass. He was caught trying something similar yesterday. Eyewitness News reporter Jamie Roth live at JFK Airport with more. Jamie?
Good morning, Ken. And when they finally took him into custody, he told the FBI that he planned to fly back to his native Nigeria next month, only to return to the U.S. on September 9th, just 2 days before the 10-year anniversary of 9/11. Investigators say the Nigerian passenger, Olajide Noibe, boarded Virgin American Flight 415 at JFK last Friday. It wasn't until the flight was airborne that the crew realized an extra passenger was on board. The flight continued on to Los Angeles, where the man got off the plane and apparently spent several days in the L.A. area. Yesterday, the same man returned to LAX and tried to get on a Delta flight bound for Atlanta, again trying to use an expired boarding pass and without valid identification. But Delta would not let him on, and the FBI arrived. Agents searched his bag and found more than 10 expired boarding passes in other people's names. Noibi is now in custody, and numerous investigations are underway.
Napolitano and the TSA and their lies exposed by NIST and also Epic as the real dangers of the naked body scanner scam further revealed. More on that from blacklistednews.com. And the latest executive order from Barry Satoru, 13575, creating rural councils.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
If you live in the heartland of America, you have to listen up. While the nation was distracted with the Anthony Weiner drama, President Obama signed an executive order that will seize greater power over food, fiber, and energy in our vast countryside areas. The president created the White House Rural Council to, quote, make sure we're working across government to strengthen rural communities and promote economic growth. Sounds great, but get this. The council involves a long list of the most powerful people in America. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, the Defense Secretary's on it, Attorney General Eric Holder, even the head of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano. Why would Homeland Security be involved in exerting power and influence over the heartland? Why would the Defense Department be involved in promoting economic growth? The plan calls for the federal government to control almost every aspect of rural America. It'll also, quote, identify and facilitate economic opportunities associated with energy development, outdoor recreation, and other conservation-related activities. Really? When did hunting and fishing become associated with conservation-related activities? And by the way, what does that mean? The aims of the White House Rural Development Plan sound eerily similar to a UN plan called Agenda 21, where a central planning agency would be responsible for oversight into all areas of our lives, a one world order. Sound familiar? Joining me now is radio host Ben Ferguson. Hey, Ben, President Reagan, 50 years ago, he started talking about this, and look what we got now. We have a White House Rural Council. Are you nervous about this?
Sure, and anybody that's in rural America should be worried about this, because what they're saying is we're going to look at what you're doing in your life, and if we seem that you're not somehow using your land to the advantage of the overall American people, then we may have some quote-unquote maybe strong suggestions for you. I mean, look at the people in Minot, North Dakota, for example, this week, who were having to deal with the government, and guess what? They didn't do it right with the levees there, so even when there's a place with a lot of people, they say, hey, why would I want the government telling me what to do with my farmland? Because that area there is massively involved with farm. What, are they going to walk in with the defense secretary and start telling them where they should farm, how they should farm, and what they should do with their land? I mean, this to me scares me.
Hey, Dr. Heldman, what about it? Why the long list? I mean, if you go down the list, almost every department, I think every department in the White House is represented. Homeland Security, we talked about it, the EPA, the federal FCC. The FCC? Why the FCC and why so many important bigwigs from the White House?
Eric, I think that list means a lot. It means that President Obama is taking what is happening with the heartland, which is a lack of economic opportunity as we've shifted from a manufacturing sector culture to a service sector culture. The heartland, rural areas have been affected. He's putting all of his big guns on it. And give me a break. These people are not going to be sitting around some conspiracy theory around a table plotting the takeover of the heartland. If you look at what the council does.
What's it for? Hang on, guys. What's it for then? I mean, it's overreaching. It's an overreach. I have a hunch that people
how
in the heartland are going, we're doing just fine. Thank you very much. Keep your grimy hands off us.
How is it an overreach? He is going to be putting money
into the Defense Department.
The Defense Department, who knows how they'll be involved? It's everyone from a major cabinet focusing on...
Give me a favor. Hold on. This is what happens when you have three remotes. Let's bring it around. Go ahead, Chris Plant. You're up.
Well, who knows how it's going to turn out, but it's good. It's real good. This is another demonstration of this administration's obsessive compulsive government disorder. They've decided that government needs to seep in. And it's not just, you shouldn't just be worried if you're in the heartland. We should all be worried about this. This is government out of control. This is crazy. This is over the top. This is one of hundreds of sort of organizations and commissions and panels that this administration has created to wheedle their way into our lives and what kind of light bulbs we can use and how much broccoli we can eat and what we can drive and what our kids have to eat at school and They're just seeking to control every area of our lives.
Certainly feels like overreach to me.
Not only overreach, Eric, I mean, so frightening. This is 16% of America, what's considered rural America, who basically is now going to have its entire livelihood run by government in Washington. They're far away from Washington. They like it that way, is my guess. I think Mr. Ferguson certainly sounds like he's representing that point of view.
Ben? Yeah, I mean, you look at this. Give me one scenario where the Homeland Security, the Defense Department, and the Attorney General should be involved when it comes to economic development of rural America. I can't see where any scenario those three would fit in if this is truly about economic development in rural America.
Really? Office of Management and Budgets, Domestic Policy Council, National Economic, Small Business. Every department
can
in the
way. Can one of you conspiracy theorists give me one good argument as to what's going to happen here? None of you have cited specifics about what
this council
will do.
Sure. Are you ready? It's a big one.
Please, give me something.
If you're going to ask a question, I'll answer it. I'll tell you exactly what this boils down to. You've got Washington, D.C., and the Obama administration wanting to look at how the land is used in rural America and see if somehow you're living up to their green standards and their economic conditions of you actually doing enough with your land and your property?
Guys, we're going to have to leave it there again. We're going to say thank you to Ben Ferguson.
Now, don't get bogged down in the fact that that's Fox News acting like they're conspiracy theorists and that Reagan and Fox News are somehow actually exposing Agenda 21, but that's an interesting story, Executive Order 13575, and we'll have to get a little bit more into that later. But now, Arlington, Texas cops testing unmanned aircraft.
In front of you is the Leptron Avenger.
Just 11 pounds and 20 inches long.
These devices are literally eyes in the sky to us.
Arlington Police Chief Theron Bowen says these unmanned aircraft are a powerful asset to the city.
Situation such as a major accident with a chemical spill that may be hazardous for people to actually go into the area, we could request emergency authorization to fly the unmanned aircraft in to take a look.
They're equipped with cameras that shoot still pictures and video, night vision equipment, and even heat sensing technology that will help the fire department.
Being able to send a vehicle up to sense the origin of the fire, so to give them the tools in order to determine where they're going to deploy their resources.
During the evaluation phase, the drones are flown within the line of sight of the pilot and 400 feet above the ground.
All of the U.S. and the FAA is depending on our testing and experimentation to create a model for law enforcement usage of these vehicles
within our personal space.
But not everyone thinks they're a good idea.
There definitely is an invasion of privacy factor with drones flying over and, you know, filming or recording whatever's going on down below.
We won't do anything that a bigger helicopter is not already doing.
Now, most of the rest of these police state updates at the end of this 6:30 news purge, saddest summer, return us to the Pacific Northwest, where they seem to be giving a lot of attention that this will be the target of homegrown terror. Tacoma man police shot during a traffic stop was armed with armor-piercing bullets. That's from nationalterroralert.com. But from right here in Oregon, KCBY.com, the investigation could be the tip of the iceberg as Klamath County, Oregon deputy arrested on sex charges.
Klamath County Sheriff's Patrol deputy loses his job and now may lose his freedom. According to Curry County Sheriff John Bishop, his office began an investigation in May into alleged sex abuse by Joshua Andrew Bryant that took place on or around May 21st. It started after an adult female had gone to the Medford police station stating that Bryant had unwanted sexual contact with her while she was physically helpless. A second adult female victim later came forward saying Bryant had also touched her in a sexual way without consent. Both incidents allegedly happened at a vacation rental in the Whales Head area north of Brookings. During the Curry County Sheriff's investigation, the 39-year-old suspect resigned from the Klamath County Sheriff's Office. On June 23rd, a Curry County grand jury indicted Bryant on numerous sex abuse charges, including two counts of unlawful sexual penetration and two counts of first-degree sex abuse. U.S. Marshals found him in the Hood River area Monday and took him into custody. However, he made bail, posting 10% of the $345,000 security. Other investigations are currently underway regarding Bryant concerning possible similar crimes in other parts of the state. The Oregon Department of Justice has now taken over prosecution of the case.
As we reported for you last week, and furthermore showing that the Pacific Northwest is being painted as a site of homegrown terror, again from NationalTerrorAlert.com, Seattle arrests show how domestic terror fight is evolving. But on the flip side, and you see how this really works, from Raw Story, And there's a video for you. Seattle officer drives away with his assault rifle on the car trunk. And as if all of that wasn't ridiculous enough, Counter Terror Expo USA 2012 coming soon. Register now at counterterrorexpo.us. Oh, God, that brings an end to all the bad news, and we can end with a way that I would like to wrap everything up with one of my favorites. Bernard Herrmann, the composer who changed how we listen to film. June 29th, 2011 marked the centenary of the birth of Bernard Herrmann, one of America's most innovative and influential composers, best known for his film scores for such classics as Citizen Kane, Vertigo, Psycho, Taxi Driver, music that forever changed the way we listen to movies. His collaborations with directors Orson Welles, Alfred Hitchcock, François Truffaut, Brian De Palma, Martin Scorsese, landmarks in cinema. And while the fiery and temperamental artist became a pariah to many in the Hollywood industry, he was infamously fired by Hitchcock for refusing to write pop music that would sell records. Herrmann's work is among the most revered and imitated in films today. He contributed substantially to radio drama and music broadcast for nearly two decades at CBS, including his original work with Orson Welles for Mercury Theater on the Air and his compositions for Rod Serling's The Twilight Zone. We provide other links for you, and CBS does provide a slideshow and even a compilation of some of the greatest hits of Bernard Herrmann.
She should put that down. She's gonna cut your fingers off.
We've been listening to some of the best work of Bernard Herrmann, who would have turned 100 years old on June 29th. All those bits of media I listed off are so many of my favorites. Orson Welles, Taxi Driver, Twilight Zone, Hitchcock, all of those things and so much more. So I wanted to share that with all of you guys. The other two related media memes notes are two obituary notes where another composer, Fred Steiner, has died at the age of 88, and he composed this one. Do you know it? Fred Steiner, composer of the Perry Mason theme, dies at the age of 88, and Peter Falk, the star of Columbo, dies at the age of 83. And that, my friends, running over time, is more media in the monarchy for you. This has been episode 223, July 1st, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Thank you for joining me on this new moon beginning to the saddest summer ever, my friends. And as always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go up with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.